Thanks very much, and welcome everybody again who is signing on live for one of our MSDN GeekSpeak webcasts. As mentioned, my name is Glenn Gordon. I am a developer evangelist with Microsoft based in the Atlanta area. And the GeekSpeak series is a different type of webcast that we're hoping to get. My co-host today on this GeekSpeak is Rachel Appel. How are you, Rachel?
Very good, Glenn. How are you doing?
Good. And how's things up in the Northeast?
Not bad, a little wet and dreary, but other than that, we're holding up here.
Well, a good day to stay inside and be on a GeekSpeak, eh?
Awesome, yes, absolutely. Today is a great day to be inside listening to GeekSpeak.
Yeah, so just a brief introduction to how GeekSpeak webcast works. Rachel and I spend a lot of time in the community in our roles, and actually Rachel was based in the community, and actually you were a guest on GeekSpeak. How long ago was that?
Yeah, maybe like 2 years ago or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So Rachel has officially joined Microsoft as a fellow developer evangelist on my team. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And so Rachel and I spend a lot of time doing presentations and working with folks in the community, and we run into a lot of experts, folks that have a lot of knowledge that's frankly, they're willing to share if they can find the right outlet. And GeekSpeak, we hope, is the right outlet for a lot of those people because in this particular format, rather than have a scripted presentation that goes for an hour with PowerPoints and sort of one person speaking, this is more of a conversation where we encourage folks to ask questions real time. So we're hoping that those of you who are attending the GeekSpeak Live will take advantage of that and use that Q&A manager and make sure that you send us your questions as we go through the topic today. So before we get to it, Rachel, I had a quick question. So I noticed the end of your bio, it talks about how you're good at setting off door alarms. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Because here last week we were all at the MVP Summit. And as I was exiting one of the buildings with a fellow MVP, mm-hmm. we were talking about all kind of great geeky stuff and not even paying attention. We got to the end of the hall and just went for the nearest door. So right as I pushed the door, he says, "Oh, emergency exit." But by that time, it was too late. The alarm started going off and bells and whistles. And so we ran like school children and hid behind the building laughing about it.
Yeah, and I actually set Rachel up because I remember that incident from outside the building, and I just threw that in her bio for the GeekSpeak. So maybe they'll stick around and be your legacy in the GeekSpeak series.
Yeah, it's a great little story there. So we set off the alarm. Testing out the new commons buildings up there on campus. So, you know, someone has to do it, you know.
Somebody has to do it, yep. So, again, we're encouraging folks to ask questions today as we spend this hour with our guests. And our guest today is Jeremy Lickness, and Jeremy is with Winelec. So, Jeremy, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background and what's got you excited, particularly about today's topic with testing Silverlight applications.
Sure, absolutely. It's kind of funny to talk about being excited about testing, but I really think with Silverlight, I mean, there's just a stigma and a history with that. So I've been writing software for 15 years now and mm-hmm. came from the sort of mid-range / mainframe background. Started on that at Manhattan Associates and then quickly moved into a developer manager role in their web-based. And, you know, web-based 10 years ago was really a set of expensive automation tools that were emulating users inputting data, and it was just a nightmare in many cases to test. So I went from that environment to a company called Hispanicare that built multilingual web systems. So this whole time I've been focused on the web and web-based applications, and in this case we had something that was similar to an eDiet application, but it actually targeted the Hispanic consumers. And so I have a background in speaking Spanish, and so it was a nice fit there. And then my prior company before joining Winelec was a mobile device management and hotspot company. And again, we used a lot of web software to manage mobile devices and provide a dashboard and a heads-up display. And that's where I got introduced to Silverlight and really started to get excited about what Silverlight can do and how Silverlight changes the game on the web. And that's when we started taking our testing model, which we had on our ASP.NET based, you know, system that was using the traditional ASP Forms engine, and started looking at what we could do with Silverlight testing. So that and was, you know, a big turning point. And after taking that company, I joined it when it was a small company. I was the third person. We took it to about 60 people before I left and decided that I really wanted to focus on Silverlight and cutting-edge Silverlight type projects. And that's when I made that decision to transition to Wintellect, which is known as a company that takes on these projects that are sort of at the leading edge of the technology space.
And, oh, yeah, that's you know, true.
My wish came true. I mean, I've gotten to be hands-on, nonstop Silverlight applications, and I just absolutely love it. It's completely transformed the way I look at building software for the Internet. Having done it for 10 years, I really believe the past 2 years that I've been focused on Silverlight have just been amazing and created a lot of change in that space.
Yeah, it really allows for truly differentiated applications. But I know a lot of the things that developers enjoy about Silverlight is the fact that if they come from a WinForms background or an ASP.NET background and they're experienced in C# or VB, they can still use those languages when they're writing the code within a Silverlight application. So does that mean that a lot of the traditional approaches to writing testable apps or working with tests applies to Silverlight just because it is, in fact, you know, managed code and compiled?
It does, and it's sort of a yes and no answer, right? Because because it's based on those existing languages and it is based on the common language runtime, there are a lot of similarities of testing in Silverlight, and the fundamentals of testing are universal, right? But when we're looking specifically at testing applications, I say yes and no because, yes, a lot of what we did with unit testing in the traditional environment does translate, and a class is a class, and I can do my unit tests for a particular method or property. But what Silverlight brings to the equation with the data binding model and the way that the presentation in the UI is really abstracted with XAML is it adds another dimension of testing even farther into the UI than what was possible before. And that's where, you know, when we were testing web applications, there was always that need to have some sort of tool that would pretend like it was a user clicking a button or entering a text form, whereas with Silverlight, because that interaction is joined to the presentation model with events and with, you know, it's wired in differently to that data binding model, it makes it a lot easier for us to test what should happen when a user does click a button or when a user does, you know, flip a page and make sure that behavior's doing what we expect it to do.
Okay. Yeah. Does it encompass all aspects of Silverlight, including the UI and even to the point where it's hosted in a web page and it's maybe interacting with the DOM or using JavaScript Bridge or something like that?
You can test to that level, and it really just depends on the type of application and how it's wired in. So with the Silverlight unit testing framework specifically, and there's a lot of different frameworks that are available. That's the one that I use extensively. It's open source, and it was written specifically for Silverlight. The test harness will actually build its own web page, its own test page. But that test page contains what we call a test panel or a test surface that you can place controls on. So it does allow for that interaction, and if you need to make tests that I guess, extend into the DOM or the HTML, you can test for those. I tend to try to abstract my application so that I've got one test that says, hey, I've got to go out into this zone and get something right, and that may be the JavaScript and the DOM. It may not be, but we're always getting something back. So let's stop there and test that piece, and then if we have to turn around now on the JavaScript side and look at, okay, are we doing what we're supposed to do on the side, you know, create that separate test for that. And that's what, you know, is nice about unit testing is you can compartmentalize and break it down into those little pieces, so to speak.
Got it. Okay. What do you have as far as the configuration on your testing environment? Do you have some stuff that you can show us?
Absolutely. In fact, I wanted to step in and just kind of show how easy it is to get wired in and get started with the Silverlight unit testing framework. So let me pull that up really quick for you.
Okay. And while Jeremy's doing that, I'll remind everybody that we're encouraging folks to ask their questions live in the Q&A pane, and we'll discuss them out loud during the Geek Speak.
So my screen should be pulled up right now. Can you see that, Glenn and Rachel?
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like you're browsing the webpage for the Silverlight unit test framework.
Right. So this is the place where the bits are updated and where it's pulled down, and you'll actually notice the note right here at the top that it's distributed as part of the Silverlight toolkit. So you can download it as a separate set of bits. Most people use the toolkit, and the bits are available in the toolkit. Another nice piece that's packaged with this is a template for both the test classes and the projects. So if I switch over to my Visual Studio solution, if I want to add a project basically using this Silverlight unit testing program, I've got a template here, Silverlight test project. That test project will actually wire in all the framework I need to start pulling in the Silverlight tests. And what that does for me is it actually gives me this app class, which Silverlight developers know is sort of the main host class for Silverlight, and it wires in this piece right here that creates a test page specifically for the Silverlight unit test framework. And the framework itself, and we'll step into an example of actually how we set up tests and classes and modules and whatnot, but what's really nice is it's got a lot of extensions and ways to interact with it. I can have interactive tests if I want to actually prompt for input, or I can have true sort of continuous integration and continuous automation type tests that run in the background. And I can even filter my tests with this. You see I have this commented out a tag expression. So I can include and exclude different tags in the system and control what tests I run, which is important when you get to a large code base. And I had the Silverlight toolkit source pulled up just because anyone who's looking to learn about unit tests, this is a great place to start because there are literally thousands of unit tests in the toolkit. And so you can see exactly how they've built a UI to determine what you want to run the test for and then filter it down, and they actually have tests that depend on other tests. So it's a great starting point to learn about tests.
Excellent.
Let me just pop back here. And I wanted to just at high level, and then we'll jump into some more questions, but show for a test class, again, with those templates, if I'm in my test project, I can add a class. And then I think Sean Wildermuth taught me that if you rotate the cursor, it comes up faster. So, and then you select the Silverlight test class, and that'll actually stub out the foundation for a class. And what's really nice about this is developers who come from a .NET traditional testing background are going to be very comfortable with this. Even people who use open source like NUnit, instead of test fixture, we have a test class and a test method. So it's an attributed-based model, and we can basically tag this, okay, so this participates in the test. Here's a tag to filter it. We've got setup for the group of tests, setup for individual tests, and then our actual test methods themselves.
Right. Now, this is similar to, as you mentioned, if people were using some of the Visual Studio versions that included testing. This is similar to the approach where you would take some aspect of your project and right-click and generate a test. Does it support that as well?
It does not support the right-click generation. It's not an actual plugin like the test framework, although that I'm sure someone listening to this can get excited and be one of the first community contributors to build that, because I don't think it would be too hard to create, and especially with Visual Studio 2010 coming out using its extensions model, should be a fun plugin to write.
Okay. But in general, when you write these test classes, you're basically having that instantiate objects or classes and things that are part of your Silverlight application, and then calling methods, passing values in, looking at return values, and seeing if it actually did what it was supposed to do, right?
Right, and that's exactly, and this is where it's interesting with Silverlight. because what you're seeing in this example that I have pulled up is pretty traditional. It would look almost the same in a .NET. I'm really newing up a object using a, mm-hmm. a container, in this case the Unity container, and I'm doing some simple tests. Did I get the container? And I've purposely failed this test. I actually want to be not null, but I ended up doing such a great job with these tests. Everything was green, so I wanted to show someone a red test. So I'm actually saying, is it null, which is the wrong thing, and we'll run it in just a second. But this okay. piece here is like traditional .NET. Where it gets interesting is when we actually start using XAML,
mm-hmm.
and when we start using the test surface to instantiate objects. So here's an example. If you see this test, and let me zoom in a little bit here for us to see. But with this test right here, you'll notice that it says asynchronous because we're actually waiting for a control to be pulled into the test panel and actually initialize and do all the things it needs to. So we're creating a test block. We're binding it. We're attaching a behavior. And then once that text block's loaded, we're testing the behavior. And these are some of the more advanced things that we just couldn't do in the web space without manipulating clicks. Here I can actually make sure that my visual element rendered correctly, and I'm even testing to make sure that what ended up inside that visual element matches what I expect. So that's an okay. example of how advanced it can become.
Now, you can run these outside of IE, right? I know, at least when you're testing web applications, the only interface into the UI is traditionally through, HTTP call, and then you get HTML back, and then you parse that. When you're testing the UI here, how are you actually instantiating that guy?
So this is what's beautiful about Silverlight is this entire runtime is hosted in the application object. And when I'm actually running it, I've got a different module that's hosting my runtime application, and this is the one that when I press play, it interacts like a normal web page would. When I'm testing it, the very same controls and modules and pieces are being pulled in, but the host is now owned by the unit test framework, and that's where this unit test system is controlling it. So it's very powerful, and what's also nice about this is the features of Silverlight such that, you know, the plugins work in multiple browsers are the same for the test framework. You can run the test framework in multiple browsers. So you don't have to, it's not as much of a concern with Silverlight, right, because it's write once and run everywhere, but if you have a different browser for whatever reason in your development environment, because it uses that same host, it can run in that system.
Okay.
And I just wanted to real quick go ahead and set this as my startup project and run it to show an example of just a few tests that I've written for this particular program. So it's already throwing the failure that I put there on purpose, but let's keep running. So what you can see here is it's actually run through and given me a report on the screen. This report, I can highlight, copy it, paste it into my Word document or an email, and mail that. If I had thousands of tests, as with the toolkit, I can navigate to that. So I have a summary at the top, and when I click on this, it'll jump to the test. And I can copy all of the failing results. So I know it's a little obscure here down in the bottom, but if I click copy all failing results and allow access to my clipboard, it'll actually pull the failures in so I can start troubleshooting what's going on with my failed tests.
Very nice.
Great. Now, Jeremy, a few folks in the audience have some questions, and there's a really great one from John, and he wants to know if the test framework comes with support for some of the well-known build servers like Cruise Control, KingCity, and all that sort of thing. So how easy is it to set it up, and, you know, is it compatible, and what's going on in that arena?
That's a very good question, because if our testing is limited to developers running it on their desktop and reporting in, then we're not going to scale to a very large application. So the answer's sort of two-part. One is there are ways to hook into the test framework that aren't as straightforward, I'll say, in that if you wanted to just out of the box run it in a cruise control or use TFS automation builds or whatnot, it's not there out of the box, but there are community contributions that help facilitate that. And as an example, I actually had the link pulled up for one that's called StatLight. And StatLight, the Silverlight testing automation tool, it'll actually work in conjunction with other types of unit testing frameworks, but it does work specifically with the Silverlight unit testing framework. So just to give an example, with StatLight, what I can do is go to my command line and actually navigate, and you'll see here I'm in the folder that I just built my ZAP file for my project. And so from the command line, I can type StatLight, give it the ZAP file name, and even send a report out, and we'll call it results.xml, and run that. And what that'll do is instead of actually instantiating a real-time browser, it'll take that Silverlight unit test engine, host it, run the tests, and then output those. So now if we pull up our results.xml, it's actually spit out an XML document that has all the detail of what failed. So now I can write my own scripts to parse that out, respond to it, create a report, or do whatever. So this is pretty straightforward. Most automation systems allow for you to kick off a process. So as long as you have a build directory that your ZAP files are going into, you can use a tool like this. I want to show another feature of StatLight specifically, which is pretty neat. What we can do is we can fire it up and give it a dash C for continuous mode. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to go ahead and point it to the, to the ZAP file here and run my test. And of course, because nothing's changed, we should see a failure here in a second. Okay, so we've got our failure. If you'll notice, it hasn't returned to the command prompt, sort of sitting there waiting for me. So now let's go back into Visual Studio Project. Let's fix this test. I actually wanted to check for not null. And just rebuild it. So we'll come back to this window and watch as it's sitting there. You can see that I'm spinning through rebuilding the project, and now it's automatically noticed that that ZAP file has changed and launched a new test run. And now we're successful with all six.
Wow.
So that's an example of a tool that's out there. Again, it's open source community project that allows you to, in the background, you can either set up a server that just continuously monitors your ZAP files and outputs the results of the test, or you can kick this off from a command line in an existing build process.
Very cool. What about integration back into Team Foundation Server? Because I know a lot of the things you can do with your check-in rules is say, don't allow this code to be checked in unless it's passed certain tests or something similar to that. Does that apply with the testing Silverlight apps as well?
That does require a little bit more manual interaction. Again, it's a separate sort of a framework that's tacked on, but it definitely has all of the hook points where you can basically set a little automation task that says once this is run, you know, update a file or trigger something that TFS can look for. So again, it's not, you know, as easy as point and click, but it is possible to get to that point.
Okay. I think that any successful build process really needs to involve something like this for all the aspects of the application.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And that's, you know, one of the things that I've seen a lot of people ask me is why unit testing? What's the value? And mm-hmm. is it worthwhile? Because it takes time to write the tests. It takes time to set up the build servers. And, you know, I wanted to drive into that a little bit because just from practical experience in building these applications, and I'll be honest with you, I came from a background with those expensive testing tools, and I ran the other way when people talked about testing. I disliked it. And actually, when I got into the .NET world, it took me a while to to actually start to look into unit tests and understand them. I was one of those developers that said, but why? You know, I can test it this way. But once I started using them as a developer, and then later in my career when I actually managed a software team and we put out software, I found there's just tremendous benefits between not only obviously catching the bugs early on, mm-hmm. but the testing should change the way people look at building their code. In other words, if I have to write a test, you can see this test is pretty simple with four lines. If I'm writing tests that are pages and pages, that's a clue to me that there's something wrong with the code I'm testing, and it needs to be split out and compartmentalized a little bit more. So there's that focus on the architecture, and there's a focus on splitting out the team. You know, we just did a recent project where we had a central user interface in Silverlight that communicated with remote agents using web services that then manipulated directory structures. Mm. If that was one monolithic process, you can imagine what a nightmare that would be. But by breaking it out and being able to test, have one separate test for am I writing to the file system, another test, am I talking to the service, another test, am I showing this item, it makes for a much faster development process.
Okay, now, Jeremy, since you were talking about some of the really big testing products from the non-.NET world, we do have a question here asking about some of the .NET testing products and also, you know, some of the other testing and general technologies on .NET. So we'll start actually with a viewer question. So have you heard anything about Telerik's web testing suite or their web testing automation framework for Silverlight?
So I'm familiar with the company, and I know they have that framework, but I do not have direct experience with it myself.
Okay.
Okay. And then what about things like unit testing in Silverlight, how you would compare it to, say, unit testing in WinForms, if you've done any WinForms, WPS, ASP.NET, and, you know, just some of the other pieces of the Microsoft technology stack. How does it kind of measure up? Is it as easy with this testing framework you're using? Is it a little more difficult? How's the transition been for you?
I would definitely say it's a lot easier. And if I were going to compare, I mean, I've been mostly focused on the web. So I came from an ASP.NET background where I found it extremely difficult to test the website, not because of not understanding it, but just the nuances of having to create an instance of a test development server and then mm-hmm. render pages and modify. And it was a very just strenuous task. Now with WPF, it's obviously a lot more like Silverlight. They share a similar UI, XAML, data binding model. So it's a much easier transition to go from WPF to Silverlight. In fact, I'd say it should be, you know, a few hours up and running type transition because you're testing for the same things. This framework makes it much, much easier, in my opinion, for really two reasons. One is intrinsic to Silverlight is this separation of the event from the action that creates the event. And what I mean by that is I don't have to worry about a user banging text into a text box. I have a data-bound model that gives me the text to enter. And I don't have to worry about a user banging on a button because I have an event that tells me that it was fired. And if I write my Silverlight applications in what I consider to be the sound way, which is not wiring directly to the events but using things like behaviors and commands to hook into those events, then I only have to test that command. I don't have to test the actual button click, if that makes sense. So that was one, the intrinsic Silverlight. Two is this test panel, this test surface. And for that I go back to this is an example, and this is up on my blog, by the way, so let me pull that up. It's csharperimage.jeremylichness.com. And you can do a search on the blog for Silverlight unit tests, and I have several posts, and I try to get the source code up there for as many of those posts as I can. In this particular example, what I was showing was different ways to bind data to a view. And so I wanted to write a test that would actually load a real user control. So here you can see I have the text XAML for user control, and I created a behavior that says basically pass this type to the behavior, and the behavior is going to be responsible for creating an instance and binding it to that user control. So, I mean, that's a complicated behavior. We want it to work, right? Because if it doesn't, then we're not going to have data. We're not going to have input. We're not going to have output. And so what's nice about this framework, in that it would be next to impossible, in my opinion, to do in the more web-oriented frameworks, for example, and looking on the HTML text side without a nice framework around it, is to actually create the UI element, create the binding, and fire this off and make sure all of that comes together. So the fact that I can take this test panel, and let me find this. So the last step right here in this test, I've created this test block and set the binding and said when it's loaded, run these tests. My last step is to actually add it to the test panel. That's a true test surface that can appear in the web browser. In fact, for some of my bigger projects, you can sit there and run and watch little forms and controls flickering in and out as they're rendered on the screen. But once it's rendered, then it can fire this and it can say, you know, is it doing what I really want to do? And to me, being able to, in how many lines of code, this is, you know, less than a dozen lines of code, say, you know, did I have the element, did the behavior function, did it bind the data, and did the data get there, is pretty powerful for writing tests.
Wow, that's pretty slick. What about on the other end of things? You know, we talked a little bit about the UI. What about, and this goes back to a blog post that just sort of flew by in the browser, the whole mocking idea. And we could probably put spend some time explaining a little bit what mocking is in a testing environment and then how Silverlight supports that. So can you help us with that?
Absolutely. And this is something that I think is very exciting with testing, too. If testing by itself, I can't get too excited about. But
yeah.
getting into mocking in a nice an architecture. So the blog post I had was actually focusing specifically on mocking in Silverlight. And to frame the discussion, there's really and sometimes I think people get confused about the difference between what we call stubs and what we call mocks. So when we're building software, we want to follow some principles, and I had a slide that sort of covered the ones that I think are powerful. I put test-driven development at the bottom just because it's an interesting concept. Some people embrace it, some don't. But, you know, we've got these principles that really boil down to, you can look at the complicated terms on the left, or you can look at the right and say, don't repeat yourself, right? If I'm writing the same code over and over, that's kind of a red flag that I'm doing something wrong, because it should be in one place and reused. And so we want to have nice interfaces that describe what we're going to do. We want the interfaces not to have 500 methods and do 500 things, but we want them focused on a specific task. And these are just fundamentals with development. So when we're testing, there's this notion of testing through layers. In other words, going back to the example I gave you, when I'm testing a user interface that sends a service call that triggers an agent to read a file off the directory system, there's a lot of steps going on. The last thing I want in a unit test is a unit test that fires an action that goes across a service, that reads something off a directory and waits for it to come back. That's
right.
Too complex, too much going on. So I want to be able to test a layer, and so one layer would be, can I read the file off the directory system? And then after I've tested that layer, I'm done with it, everything else in my system should just look at an interface that says, you know, ifileread.getfile. I shouldn't even be seeing a file system object. I just know I'm talking to an interface and grabbing something. So when I'm testing, we have this challenge of, now I'm testing the service layer, and it's got to call the file system layer. So do I need to create a file system object and actually set up test data on disk and do all these things? Well, no, right, because that's already been testing. We don't want it to be part of this test. This test is, when I get something, will it come back over the wire? And that's
right.
Where stubs and mocks come into play. A stub is simply something that allows your test to happen. So I may have an interface that gets passed in, but if I don't do anything with it, first I'd have to ask, why am I passing it in? But second, you know, I just need it there for the test to function, then I stub something out. And that might be as simple as actually implementing an interface and having all the methods just return. That's what a stub is. A mock is a little more complex. A mock is something that honors that contract, whether it's an interface or whether it's an abstract base class. But when you interact with that interface, the mock will actually change or store something as a result of that interaction. And that allows you to look at the mock and figure out if our interactions took place the way we wanted them to. And so that's where mocking frameworks come into play. And I did this example of basically a dialogue service with a thesaurus. So I've got over here on the left, you can see computer, dogma. We've got a lot of that in development, right? And then World Wide Web. And then over on the right side, we get some of the synonyms, canon, conviction, gospel, tenet, view. And so what we did is built this out and said, once we have all this in place, we've got to write tests for it. So how do we write the test without actually having a real service that's going out and fetching synonyms or a real service that's pulling back a whole dictionary? And that's where this mocking framework comes into play. So the example I'm using here is actually MOQ. And people sometimes call it mock, sometimes they call it mock Q. But it's basically focused specifically for .NET, and it has a drop for Silverlight. And you can see here some examples that they have on their front page of how easy it is to set up a test. What I basically do in my testing layer is, instead of having to wire up a whole substitute service, I just create this mock object. So here I've got a dialog that's bringing back user input, right? You can click OK or cancel. And we obviously don't want to have to wait for the user to click that in our test. So we're going to mock it. So we actually come here and just say mock in the interface. And then what mock will do is it'll look at that interface and find out all the methods and actions and pieces that are a part of it. So then I can set up that mock and basically say, in this example, if I call list words, and you see this, it is any action list string. So if I call it with any action that's taking a list of strings, what we want to do is actually call that action and pass it a word list. So that's, and we could probably have a whole call and talk about mocking frameworks, but basically what I do is I set up what I expect. So if you ask me for a list of words and give me a method to call, I'm going to call it, but with my list of words. So that's how I'm setting up the test. And then after the test is run, then we can verify, and we can say, you called get synonyms, and it was a string that equals my first word. And, you know, with any action, and you called it exactly once, and so on and so forth. So what that's doing is I'm not testing that my thesaurus is working. I don't care about that. What I'm testing is what's calling the thesaurus is doing what it's supposed to do, just like I would test if my service is really calling the file system and asking for a list of files. And so that's what mocking does for you, is it lets you stage those expected values so you can test within the current layer and not worry about all the plumbing and the things that are happening on other layers in the system.
Right. I've seen some scenarios where people try to do this where they'll have a testing database and they'll still let their test calls go through the entire stack, and even though, yeah, you can get some expected results and do some verification there, it's very expensive to query the database each time if you're just running the tests, and it keeps you from, it basically makes it take too long for you to verify your code works, and I think it gets in the way of continuous integration, right, because you're spending too much time in that actual fetching from the database when really that's not what you should be testing.
Right, and that's absolutely right, and that's a tenet of unit testing, is that unit tests should be fast. And so if I'm waiting for a database, and I believe me, I've been at shops where their unit test, quote, framework was a set of transactions that were writing fields, reading them back, and then doing rollbacks. And that's just, it's not a robust, if you're testing just the data layer, that may make sense. It probably makes more sense to set up a whole database, but that's, you know, we'll get into that another time. But you're right. The test should be focused on what the tests are, and that's why the stubs and mocks take all your boundary conditions and handle them for you, so you can focus on just that test and let it run quick and snappy and have that continuous integration, you know, continuous automation running every night, for example.
Sure. And before we get off this demo, I know there's a couple of questions, but it looks like you're mocking sort of in both directions, right? You're calling a function, getting the data back, and that's returning some expected data back. But then it looks like you're also maybe throwing up a dialog box and waiting for a user to interact with it, and you're mocking up that interaction as well. Is that what I'm seeing going on there?
Right. So to avoid actually having a user respond, what I might do is let's say I have a command that deletes a file, and I have a dialog that pops up, and then we want to say, are you sure you want to delete it? Okay, or cancel. Well, instead mm-hmm. of testing actually having someone click okay or cancel in my setup, and let me see if I can find this where I set up the dialog here. Let's see, there's the thesaurus. But basically in my setup, so here we go. So here I'm mocking up the dialog itself. And I'm saying that when I call show dialog with any string, which is the title and a message, and then an action, that last parameter is call me back with an action of what the result is, then I fire this callback, and in this case, I'm calling back with true. So what I'm saying is whenever this test asks for a dialog box, just pretend like the user clicked true, and then we can test and make sure that it went through and called the delete method. On the same token, we would have another test that basically is test delete canceled, and it would return a false, and then we want to make sure that when we called it and we pretended like the user clicked false, that we did not call the delete method because we're paying attention to what they're telling us.
Very interesting.
And that's what this verify does, is it said, okay, whenever the dialog's here, call true, now let's execute the command, and this is bound directly to a button on the display. So interactively, it would pop up a dialog. We're mocking that, and then we say, okay, now when it's all said and done, let's make sure we actually did call delete because we pretended like the user confirmed.
Very cool. Really lets you isolate when, in fact, you're testing, yeah.
So, Jeremy, there's some more audience questions, somewhat to do with what you're talking about, but some not, I suppose. First one would be, how do you test the XAML in a real application, especially when it's altered by a stylist or a designer, and you want to test and make sure they haven't broken it? So Dave is asking that question. And I think that's pretty applicable to everybody. We have the designers getting in there and, you know, just wrecking everything, or at least from our perspective. So how would you go about doing that?
All right. So first I'm looking at the attendees list and seeing how many designers we have on the call before I frame my answer. But that is a very good question. And it's actually an interesting one because it's where some danger can come into play when we're dealing with behaviors and the way that Silverlight handles data binding. So to set the stage and make sure I'm understanding this, I've got XAML that's bound to, say, a click command. And I can write my unit tests left and right that say when that delete command, for example, is called, is it behaving the way it is? But if someone else comes in and changes the XAML and they take off that behavior for the command. So in other words, there's a button sitting there. It used to have something that said when this button's clicked, call the delete command. Now it doesn't. How do we know that? And that's a very good question. So there's a few ways to do that. You can actually, in this Silverlight unit testing framework, and I don't have an example, but I want to thank whoever asked that question for a great idea for a blog post. Right? So we'll get some code together and answer that and post it up. But there's really two ways that you can do that off the top of my head because, like I said, it's very interesting. One is you can actually have another test here that would test that clicking the button generates the delete command. So in that case, this delete command is on a view model. And so my view model should have an interface or a base class so I can abstract even the view model. And then what I would do is take my XAML and I would mock the view model. And then I would place that XAML control, just like I did in the example earlier where we were looking at the code, and I had this piece. Well, you can actually refer to the file. You could share the XAML file into your test project so that it's an exact copy of whatever the XAML is and read it as a file and actually load it and dynamically inject it. So we can put it on the test surface, find the button, fire the click event, and then make sure that behavior got called. So that's one way. And we wouldn't test anything beyond that, right, because we're isolating. So we would actually have a UI test layer that's testing, are my events down to my commands? That would be the one way. The other way that I can think of, actually, that was my second way. So the first way would be to actually reference the control directly, put on the test panel. The second way would be to load the XAML as a file, as a resource, and instantiate it and test that behavior. So there's a couple of different ways. It's actually a very interesting question, and I'm glad someone asked that.
Okay, great. Now, another related question, knocking it back a little bit into the novice arena, is Nello asks, you've been developing Silverlight for under a year and just starting out as a developer in general in his career. Doesn't understand everything that's out there about testing stuff. How do you go about starting to understand and implement these test procedures? Do you have some resources, some websites? What would you say, Jeremy, is the best place for those just getting started that want to unit test in Silverlight?
That's also a very good question. I'm a little bit spoiled because I sort of eased into it. I had a huge unit testing background where I came from, so when I moved to Silverlight, it was more, okay, how do we use these tools and jump into them? But one great place to go, and I've got it pulled up on the screen right now, is Jeff Wilcox is actually the creator of the toolkit. And if you go to his site, he's got a link, his testing posts, and throughout these are all walkthroughs. They're very straightforward, easy-to-read guides. Some of them have video, some of them have text and posts, and they literally step you through the different steps that you need to take to learn about unit testing. So I know people learn in different ways. I'm pretty much a Twitter and a blog person, right? I use Twitter to stay current, and then I use blogs to learn and step through tutorials. But that's where I found the most information specific to the Silverlight unit testing framework. I wish I had some great resources on hand for unit testing in general, which I don't, and I would have to dig into that. But I think this is a great place to start from the person who built the toolkit. He has, you know, several different tutorials and walkthroughs, and you can even see, you know, there's Python and Ruby, so it's not even specific to C Sharp. So.
We'll be putting all these links up. I was going to say we're going to be putting all these links up after the Geek Speak show. So.
That's also what I was just going to say. You just beat me to the punch there, Glenn. Okay. So, and then there is one more question, like a two-part question from Keaton, and asking about if there's any automation tools like QTP that can be used natively with Silverlight. And the second half of the question is, what's the status on the Visual Studio 2010 coded UI test being compatible with Silverlight? And, yeah, I'm afraid I don't really know much about the coded UI test and its Silverlight compatibility to chip in there at all.
Yeah, those are very good questions, and I'm not even sure if it's for Silverlight 4 specifically. I'll speak to that. As far as unit tests being integrated with the IDE, I haven't heard an official word either way on that. It's an interesting question. I'll definitely look into that. But the last time I checked, I was not aware of it being part of the framework that's included with Visual Studio, but I could be completely off base because a lot's happened in the release. Microsoft is moving ultra fast with their releases and getting a lot of developer feedback into those releases. So I would suspect there's going to be something. I can't speak to specifically what that will be. As far as the integrated native unit test models, again, as of Silverlight 3, there's nothing completely integrated, but there are, as I talked about earlier with the Statlight and some other community initiatives, and all you have to do is Bing Silverlight unit testing, and you can see here I actually did my search on unit testing framework Justin because he's got a great post on that goes through in great detail on the unit testing framework. But basically just Bing that Silverlight unit testing, and you'll find a host of sites, because this is something that a lot of companies are using, and it's in production, and it's a problem that people have, right? They have to have integration testing. So there's a lot of different solutions out there that are pretty easy to bolt on, and I've seen ones that work with TFS and TeamCity and whatever, and I've always just used StatLight because it doesn't really care. You just launch it from the run line, and you can integrate it into your build pipeline that way, but there's definitely other solutions out there. So.
Yeah. One of the things that comes to mind regarding the code is the fact that Silverlight allows you to use dynamic languages. So what aspects of that do you need to take into consideration when you're creating tests?
You just opened a whole new can of worms, right?
It's always great to do just a few minutes before the end, right?
Right, exactly. So what really needs to happen is it depends on how you're taking advantage of those dynamic languages. In other words, there's going to be compile time and runtime implementations, right? So are you speaking mm-hmm. more towards the runtime use, or just in general if I'm dealing with a different type of language like R-sharp or Python, for example?
Yeah, I was thinking, an Iron Python chunk of code that Silverlight's going to handle at runtime. Is that something that you can build tests around?
It is, because when you build that dynamic piece of code, you're actually wrapping it in a dynamic object that allows you to access it. And so in that same respect, you should be able to access that object and basically trigger something to happen and then inspect it, kind of like what we were talking about with Mox, to see the infinite result. It gets a little more complex, though, because I know some of the excitement around, for example, Silverlight 4 is around comm automation and interop and some of the things you can do there. And
right.
I would just caution people to use the same techniques that I believe are sound principles, regardless of if you're developing in Silverlight or not. If I'm, even in this example I gave you, not using necessarily comm interop, but I am using the .NET file system object, I did not choose to build that class that's responsible for looking at the file system mm-hmm. as returning a file system info or IO. I wrapped it. So I have an interface that says list files, but I don't know how it's listing those files. Within that class, sure, I'll use file.io and I'll read the directory and whatever. And I would just caution people in Silverlight when they're either using dynamic languages, like what you mentioned at runtime, or if they're using comm interop or whatever, that what they would do is wrap those functions in an interface or a class and expose that class. Don't expose the actual dynamic behavior. Expose mm-hmm. what you're looking to get out of it. And then you can create that extra layer and test within it and outside of it without having to test the boundary between the two, if that makes sense.
I see. Okay. And what about some scenarios where you're running in browser versus out of browser? Can you provide that to the Silverlight control that's running so that it thinks it's in or out of browser before you actually run the test and then see if it responds correctly?
To my knowledge, with the Silverlight framework, at least in Silverlight 3, the restriction on the sandbox is something that we just can't get around, right? So you actually, to test out of browser, to my knowledge, and I could be wrong, and I'll post it if I get corrected, but my understanding is you actually have to take an action to cause it to go, the full screen out of browser in Silverlight 3. Silverlight 4 is a different story because you can actually install it. So I'll be honest, I haven't dealt with that particular test scenario. But I know in Silverlight 3, for example, launching the full screen mode, you actually have to trigger the user to perform that action so that it can basically play within the security realm of the sandbox and go into a full screen, kind of disappear out of the browser Chrome. And then you can run all the tests that you want, but it gets into a whole other scenario with Silverlight 4. You don't have this because of elevated trust, but in Silverlight 3, once you go out of the browser Chrome, you also have a limited set of inputs available. So you have to deal with making sure that you've got that subset of inputs when you're testing.
Right. Okay. Well, I've moved us on to a resource slides, so folks can get links to your to our blogs. I've got your Wintellect blog in here. Will that allow people to get to your regular one?
Yes, that's actually a mirror of regular one, so they forward to each other, and that's perfect. So
okay, good. So a couple of things that I want to call folks' attention to is we've got a GeekSpeak blog where, again, we're going to put all the links mentioned on today's show. We've got a couple of GeekSpeak webcasts coming up in March, so you can tune into those. And we also have our recordings on Channel 9, so you can go and catch past GeekSpeaks as well. So there is a survey we want to have our webcast producer put up, and then while that's up, we'll do some final wrap-up.
Okay, thanks so much. And at this time, ladies and gentlemen, you should see a survey in the main slide window there. And we do ask that you just take a moment to complete the survey, because it does give us valuable feedback. All right, and I'll hand it back to our presenters to finish up.
Okay, great. So, Jeremy, thanks for being on. Any sort of last words or overarching advice you could give folks that are interested in delving more into the testing aspects of Silverlight?
Well, I mean, I think it's exciting that there were some new developers on who are interested in it. I think, as I mentioned, testing has gotten a bad rap just because of some of the past mistakes, kind of like code generation and some other things that, I've had a rough and tumble history. So I think that everyone should definitely look into that. And even if you're not a developer who's used to writing unit tests or integrating it into your process, I think if you just give yourself the discipline and the time to say, I'm going to take one project, even if it's a side project, and build that out and focus on the tests, you'll find that it's ultimately going to allow you to write much higher quality code a lot faster, and it'll change the way that you look at the architecture, and I believe it'll make you a better developer overall. So I just, the Silverlight community specifically, Microsoft in general, but Silverlight specifically is very active. There are so many people there. If you go to, and I didn't list this before, but silverlight.net/forums, it's the forum support. If you post a message there, you'll probably get a response within minutes many times. And so don't be afraid to go out and ask for help and ask where these resources are. I know there's several blog tutorials and videos and other things out there. So just grab that content and go for it and then turn around and help point other people to it as well, because it's very powerful.
Very cool. And any links to ammunition that folks could use with their management if they're stuck maybe in a Dilbert scenario that says, oh, I don't pay you to test, I pay you to code. Anything you can think of in that area?
That's a good one. Another subject for a blog post. I can say, go look at this blog post. But, definitely, I've got 5 points, and I'll share these points with you so we can post them up or put them somewhere for people to see. But I think the take-home to the boss, and I've been on both sides. I've been the developer, and I've been the boss in charge of the budget. And the take-home is that by implementing testing into the scenario, it's faster code, it's stable code, it's easier to refactor and change the code, and it's easier to distribute workload in the team. There's that old adage that 9 programmers can't make a baby in 1 month, and what it's talking to is about separation of workflow. But when you get into a testing mindset and you start to separate your components appropriately, you can put 9 developers on a project and get it done faster. So I think all those factors together really show the ROI. Less bugs, less rework, faster refactoring, better leveraging of the team.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, thanks, Jeremy, for being on. Really appreciate it. Very cool in-depth conversations.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
And Rachel, thanks for co-hosting.
Sure thing, Glenn.
And we'll see everybody on another upcoming GeekSpeak.